Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. As we enjoy this January thaw, it's also time to start planning for spring. We're going to start the hour today with Seed Starting 101. And here with me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Linda Nave is here, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. Hello, Linda.
Oh, hi, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Thank you both for being here today. And first of all, seed starting. I mean, a lot of people do it. Why start your own seeds? What's the benefit?
It's fun.
All right.
Basically.
It is, you know, and it gives you something to do in the wintertime.
Right.
Those of us who are sort of addicted to needing the soil and needing to grow things, it's really something to do in the winter. It's a great hobby.
All right. And
if you want a specific variety, you can order the seed, get that seed, and then start it yourself, where you may not find it at the local garden center or greenhouse.
So it gives you more options.
Right.
It also could potentially save you money.
It could.
That goes with quantity.
Uh-huh.
If you're just going to grow 6 tomato plants and you can buy that variety at the garden center, except for the fun of it, I probably wouldn't bother. But if you're going to grow a whole lot of them, or again, you can't find the variety, that would be the thing.
All right. And you mentioned tomato plants. So a lot of us know that, you know, that you need to start your tomato plants, or you need to buy transplants of things like that. What other kinds of things that you plant in your garden would you want to start from seed?
I think you could start things, for example, in the vegetable garden, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower.
Kale. Kohlrabi even.
Mm-hmm. And as far as flowers, then you have things like, for example, petunias, marigolds, impatiens, salvia, a number of things. Some are rather challenging, for example, begonias, because they have very fine seed. Mm-hmm. They grow very, very slowly. They're more challenging, but definitely petunias and marigolds and zinnias.
Petunias have very fine seeds too, don't they?
Right, but they're typically coated. They're pelletized, where they coat those with clay, so they're kind of a round little object, pretty easy to sow.
So let's say you decide, I do want to do this year. I want to start my own seeds. Let's talk about startup costs and what you really need, because you could go to the garden center and buy an expensive setup. They would love to sell that to you. But what do you really need?
You can do it on the cheap, especially on the light aspect of it, because growing them in a window, they're just not going to get enough light. So they need additional lighting. And you can get by with a cheap fluorescent shop fixture. The main thing is you want to have 240-watt tubes in that fixture, and then as soon as the seeds germinate, you want to place those within a few inches, within like 3 to 4 inches of the actual light source. So if you do that, you're perfectly fine. You don't need grow lights. You don't need LED lights. They're more expensive. So just a cheap fluorescent light fixture should work just fine.
All right. So you don't need to invest a whole lot of money.
No.
But what about warmth? Because, all right, the extra space that I have in my house is in my basement, and my basement is freezing.
Okay.
Warmth is very important.
It is, as far as germination.
It is, because the plants will germinate when it's a little cooler, but they don't germinate uniformly. And so you'll have a few pop up here and there, and then the others sit there until it gets warmer. So you'll notice in some of the seed catalogs or places where you buy your seeds, they'll have these heating mats. They do help keep that soil a nice uniform temperature, and you'll find that really works well to get that uniform germination.
All right, so
because,
even if you have a really chilly basement,
right,
that's going to be enough?
Because the temperature should be, as far as the germination temperature of the medium, should be for most things around 70 to 75. And your air temperature, if it's 65 to 70, that's a little bit lower than that. So you could, on the cheap again, maybe put these on top of a radiator, if you have that, or in front of a furnace vent where the heat is coming out. That would be a cheap way of doing it too. So those might work.
All right. Now, once you plant your seeds, you've got your light, you've got enough heat to make things work. In those early stages, I think a lot of us get really enthusiastic and excited and we want to do stuff. There's not that much to do right at the start. What kind of upkeep do you need when the seeds are planted and in that germination stage?
Well, typically things will germinate maybe in a week or two. Okay. And as soon as you sow the seed, you typically want to make sure the medium is kept moist. And so you can just cover them with a clear plastic dome, which you can buy. You can also use plastic food wrap, the clear plastic food wrap. Just place that over the top and then kind of tape it to it. So then it's going to have consistent moisture. Then it only needs heat. So you basically just wait until germination. And as soon as it germinates, the seedlings come up. You take off the plastic wrap, the plastic dome, and then you put it underneath the lights.
All right. Now, how about light placement? Does the light need to be really close to the plants as they grow? Do you move that over time?
Within 3 or 4 inches. So as close as you can get, because as light travels out, it also disperses. So you want it real close to the light source. And yes, as the seedlings grow, you want to raise that light source higher. So
a lot of people run into, when they start seeds inside, they end up with kind of weak plants. They either get leggy or they just, I don't know, don't have the strength to stand up to being outside. What do you do to prevent that?
Light. Because typically it's due to inadequate light. So if you put it in front of a window and that's the sole light source, they tend to reach or stretch to reach that light. And so they get very tall, very spindly. So if you put a light source very close to them, they tend to stay much more compact. Another thing is once they germinate, once the seeds come up, allow that potting soil to dry out a little bit each time before you water again. Because if you keep it constantly wet, that also tends to stretch them a little bit. And also once they come up, kind of lower the temperature a little bit. So if you need a temperature of 75 degrees for germination, once they come up, maybe lower it to maybe 60, 65, so that, again, they don't stretch. So maybe a little bit cooler temperatures.
All right. And I think last year when we talked about this, we talked about a little bit of a disturbance, like moving air or just brushing your hand across the top of the plants, that can be beneficial.
Right. They do that in commercial greenhouses where they have these structures that blow out air, and it simply goes back and forth across the bed. And in doing so, it basically causes the plants to stay a little bit more compact and sturdy.
Okay, so you could
do that.
Recreate that. You could put
with
up a fan
possibly,
right?
Yeah.
Or you could gently brush your hand across
mm-hmm,
the top.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, how do you know when to plant?
Basically, you have to know your plants or have a good reference. Most of the seed packets and some of the catalogs will give you an indication when you want to start these indoors. Some things like tomatoes grow very quickly, and you want to start these inside maybe 6 weeks before the outdoor planting date. Other things like, for example, begonias, they take 12 to 16 weeks.
Wow.
So you need to know that. So I would check the seed packet, the seed catalog, and they'll give you an idea as far as the crop time.
Yeah, not all starts at the same time. For example, herbs, too, is another one where you want to grow an assortment of herbs like basil and chives and cilantro and rosemary and lavender. Well, some of those take a very long time to germinate, such as rosemary and lavender. Time comes up in 3 to 5 days. So, and then you have cilantro that may take 21 days to come up, but then it's ready for harvest in another 30 days. So you've got to take in consideration when you want that crop, how, if you're going to be setting it outdoors, and then again, count back the number of weeks it takes. So don't start everything at the same time is the moral of the story there.
All right. Read the fine print.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And once you move stuff outside, we'll talk about this, I'm sure, several more times in the season, but you can't just take the plants from your basement and put them in the ground, right?
No, you can't. So because if you did.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. We've been talking about starting seeds, a wonderful thing to think about this time of year, even though the sun is shining today. We still have a few more weeks of winter to endure. It's great to think about spring gardening. But whatever you're thinking about, we can answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And let's talk about just a couple more terms before we get to the phones. We talked about determinate and indeterminate tomatoes, something that I think confuses some of us. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about long day and short day onions.
Right. That's important because if you plant a short day onion in Iowa, they will start to bulb when they're quite small. And because they have just a small amount of foliage, they're not going to form a big bulb. So they're not really a good, let's say, storage type onion. You want a long day onion, which doesn't begin to bulb until pretty late in the spring. Mm-hmm. Therefore, at that point, the plant has plenty of foliage, so it can produce a big bulb. So you want a long day onion.
And if you're ordering plants, and typically that's what we do, go to the seed catalogs and look for those. So you want to grow a Vidalia onion, not in Iowa. Can't do it. One thing, it won't be a Vidalia onion because that's very specific to Vidalia, Georgia. But if you're looking for that large sweet onion, they are short day. Many of those are short day onions. So like the Texas varieties are short day onions. They plant those in the fall. That's why we have them available in January and February because they're planted in early spring because they're planted in the fall. The short day onions are planted in the late winter, early spring, you know, like typically in April and May, which will produce a later crop. So check that out when you're going to order onion plants.
All right. Now let's talk about cucumbers. What do we need to know?
Well, cucumbers, there are so many varieties of cucumbers out there. And again, you have your slicers, but now they've introduced in the last 20-some years some terms called gynoecious varieties and parthenocarpic varieties. So what does that mean? Well, cucurbits, that is the cucumbers, muskmelon, watermelon, squash, are dioecious plants, meaning they have both a male and a female flower. Now, that male and female flower, you get cross-pollination when the bees come, and then you get fruit set. However, the female flowers are the ones who set the fruit, and then the male flowers provide the pollen and then fall off. So if male flowers dominate female flowers 10 to 1, you're mostly going to have female flowers. Oh, excuse me. So we're looking for crops that are monoecious, that have separate, not dioecious. You
okay.
want separate flowers on the same plants. That's right. Dioecious have two separate houses, meaning they have a male flower on a male plant and a female flower on a female plant. So we're looking at monoecious plants. So anyway, back to the gynoecious. So the plant breeders have developed varieties that produce a very minimal amount of male flowers. So they're primarily all female flowers. And what that does then is it guarantees you're going to have more fruit set because most of the flowers will have the female fruit-bearing flowers on them. So gynoecious varieties are primarily female fruiting varieties with a few male flowers in there to provide pollination, but not as many. Then you see these terms called European cucumbers, thin skin cucumbers, that they include the term parthenocarpic. And parthenocarpic is development of fruit without fertilization. So in other words, they're great for indoor growing of cucumbers because you don't need the bees to pollinate. They're going to set fruit without fertilization, okay? So the fruit resembles normal fruit. Some of them have maybe different characteristics. They may be more spineless or they may have thinner skin, but they are essentially seedless. So parthenocarpic, again, varieties are great for like high tunnels and they're great for indoor environments. They're okay for outdoor environments. However, be cautious. Don't plant parthenocarpic varieties beside, let's say, gynoecious or other monoecious varieties, because what will happen is they will cross-pollinate. The bee will move the pollen and fertilize the parthenocarpic variety, and it will produce some seeds, and it will be misshapen because of the incomplete seed development on certain parts of that fruit. So the key there is if you're going to grow them, and they're wonderful varieties like Diva is a great one to grow, Sweet Success, the European varieties, some of the Burpless might be a little bit on the parthenocarpic side, some of the varieties. So they're great to grow, but just keep in mind, don't plant them with any other varieties of cucumbers. Use that as your sole variety.
Okay. I'm scared of cucumbers now, but I'll call you.
It's
if
not
I get
complicated.
Okay.
The breeders have just made it, they're really productive.
All right.
They really grow a lot. They grow a lot of cucumbers. You're not going to need a lot of plants. They're great for home gardens.
All right. Let's get to questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. First up, we've got Kirk in Des Moines. Hi, Kirk. Oh, we seem to have lost Kirk. So let's go to Jennifer in Davenport. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I have an olive tree in a pot, and it's been doing really well. I brought it in from my sun porch because it got so super cold. So I have it out now, and it's starting to lose some leaves, and it's got looks like little stringy things, and I suspect there's some kind of aphid or mite, and I wondered what I should do with that.
They wouldn't be stringy if they were a mite or an aphid, so I'm not sure exactly what you're saying.
They look kind of like little webs.
Okay. Now, if you had spider mites, there would be some very fine webbing. But if you looked very, very closely, you would see these very small little specks moving about that webbing. And that would be a spider mite. And if it were a spider mite, you could use like insecticidal soap and spray the plants with that.
Okay.
You might take it to, like, for example, the bathtub or the shower and just give it a nice bath with that insecticidal soap.
Okay. And my other item is I have some endless summer hydrangeas. They get huge and beautiful glossy leaves, but no blooming. So I'm trying to amend the soil in the spring, but I'm not sure. Maybe
that's not the problem. Summer was highly promoted, highly planted, but it's kind of very, very finicky.
Yes.
And some people refer to it as endless bummer because it just doesn't bloom like it should. So,
there you go.
I think they rushed it to the market a little bit too soon, and there's not really much you can do about it. It just blooms sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. Now, I would suggest...
So maybe buy a different variety?
That would be a possibility, too. But I would suggest if you have endless summer, do not prune it until it leaves out in the spring. Let it leaf out first, and then just prune out the dead wood. If you have quite a bit of wood from the previous year, if it survives the winter, it's more likely to bloom. It's more likely, but it's not a guarantee. So just leave it till spring, let it leaf out, then prune out the dead wood, see what it does. And if you just are impatient, then I would try a different variety.
And the new shoots.
What variety would you recommend?
Ooh, there's so many of them. I can't really say at this point, but there are a number of new ones that come out.
It depends on what kind of a flower head you want
as well.
Do you want a big pom-pom flower? Then Annabelle Hydrangea is a white one, and it's a beautiful one.
Okay.
Or you can go with some of those that have... more of a lace cap type, and they're wonderful too. A little quick fire is a good one. So there are a lot of them out there. It's just look for them. I would not, as Richard said, recommend endless summer. It is also very finicky for moisture. You'll find you go through the day, you've just watered it, and you have a hot day, and all of a sudden it's just totally wilted again. And it just doesn't absorb moisture like other hydrangeas and other plants do.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Jennifer. We've got some lines open for you right now at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Amanda. She says, I live near Waverly, and I've tried growing cilantro for 3 or 4 years now. It has self-seeded where I planted it, but every year my cilantro leaves are very feathery and look nothing like the grocery store cilantro that I buy. Do I simply have the wrong kind of cilantro, or is there a trick to growing it so that it grows lush and ready for my guacamole?
That's a good question. Well, if she's self-seeding it, I would probably start with fresh seed from the seed packet and grow it that way. And oftentimes with self-seeded, they come up awful thick. And if you have a real thick clump of it, there's not going to be a lot of good vegetative growth. They'll be competing with each other for light and water. So they do need space to grow. And I think that may be part of her problem, is she's not giving them enough space to grow. Start with fresh seed. Just go in and sow the seed so that you have a good couple inches at least, if not 4 inches between plants. And watch it carefully, because they look really good one day and they go to seed the next day. So then they become coriander if you let them go to seed. So I would definitely start seed them yourself, get them going, and give them plenty of room to grow.
And you need to harvest frequently then.
Yes, you do. And so what I would suggest is planting a small amount and staggering your planting dates throughout the summer so that you have a little bit now, they come on a little bit later. And in the heat of the summer, cilantro just doesn't do very well.
All right. And if you're staggering, do you feel like you need to spread that out? I know a lot of people love to plant their herbs in a half barrel, in a nice big clump.
Yeah. If you're staggering, I would plant them at least 14 days apart. A few seeds, 14 days apart.
Okay. Let's get back to some other questions here. This one's from Brendan. He says, I'm curious about some native ornamental grasses. I'm looking for something 3 foot or taller that might look decent in winter.
Well, there are a number of native grasses and some really nice cultivars. For example, you have things like switchgrass. There are a number of very nice cultivars that are cultivars that turn kind of reddish purple in late summer, early fall. There are cultivars like North Wind that are very, very upright. They grow about 4 feet tall, maybe 5 feet tall, but very, very upright, very columnar. So you could use them as a low hedge. There are varieties of little blue stem. Little blue stem tends to be kind of floppy, the species, but there are cultivars that are more upright, and so they do really nicely in the garden. There are cultivars that turn kind of reddish brown again in the fall, so you have some color. So there are some nice switchgrass varieties, little blue stem, Indian grass, a big blue stem. There are nice cultivars on the market on those.
And even once they lose their seeds, they're still
right.
Nice to look at through
right.
the winter
right.
months.
So I would definitely consider some of those native grasses and see what you can find locally.
All right. The number to call with your questions, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Roger is on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Roger.
How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Okay, I have two types of peonies. One is called a fern leaf or Mother's Day peony. I think that's what the general term is. And they come up. I can't get a bush to grow. They just come up in 3 little shoots, like. They have small little flowers on them. And probably within about 3 weeks after blooming, or probably at the middle of June, they start to die. The plant that does just kind of shrivels up and turns brown. And the other peonies will have it after they bloom, the leaves turn black with big black spots on it. And this is a full sun area, so I don't know if I'd get them in the wrong place or wrong soil or what. But they grow, and then they die off right away.
Okay. Well, as far as the typical peony with the brown blotches, I'm assuming that's a fungal disease. And as far as what I would do, in the fall of the year, I would cut them back to the ground, right back to the ground, and remove that dead debris from the area and destroy it. Leaving any of the debris in the area will help to reinfect next year's foliage, so get rid of it. If you water the plants, don't get the foliage wet. That's about all you can do. As far as the fernleaf peony, if it's dying back that quickly, the planting site must not be very favorable. There must be something wrong with the site. Maybe it's too wet. Maybe it's a very clay type soil, whatever. But there must be something that's just not very favorable. And so I might be inclined to maybe transplant it to a different site, possibly, maybe in late summer. Just make sure the important things basically would be it needs to be a fertile, well-drained soil. They do not like wet soils. It needs to be a nice, loose, fertile soil and plenty of sun. And if you think you have a good site, but maybe the soil is not the best, then I would work in a lot of compost or composted manure. And so you can improve the soil. But I think there must be something wrong with the site as far as a fernleaf peony.
Okay, it is at the lower end. My garden does slope, and it is at the lower end of that. So maybe I have too much water on it then.
Well, if you ever see water ponding nearby, that would be a sign maybe it is poorly drained.
Okay. All right. I will try all those things and see what I come up with. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Roger. Next up, let's go to John in Mason. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm interested in starting some Virginia bluebells, and I was wondering if I can just broadcast those or if I should start those early inside. And I was kind of thinking about putting them in underneath some oak trees. Do they require more sun than that?
I think that would work. I think I would try to establish them by buying either bare root or potted plants. You can buy the potted plants locally at a garden center sometimes. Bare root plants you can purchase through some of the mail order catalogs that specialize in native plant material. But once you establish them, then they will self-seed on their own very nicely, very freely. Mm-hmm. So I think I would start, though, by planting either potted plants or bare root plants.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. I put in a lot of bare root Virginia bluebells last year, so I'm very eager to see what happens this spring because I want them badly, and they spread really well when they want to.
Oh, yeah.
They do.
If they have a good site, they just go to town.
All right. Well, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I hope John has good luck, too. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture, here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Linda Nave, ISU Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. You can join the conversation with your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's a question from Betty in Des Moines. Is it time to prune my bur oak tree?
You can, absolutely. You want to do it during the winter months. So basically, it begins typically late November, early December, and usually goes to late February, early March.
All right.
So you're just fine.
These warmer than average weekends are a great time to get
right.
that kind of work done.
Right.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Ralph is on the line in Grinnell. Hi, Ralph.
Hi there. What is there going to be any kind of grafting classes coming up? I think last year the guy from, or not Powashik, but Johnson County had a grafting class.
I would believe so, but I don't know of the dates yet at this point.
There is a grafting demonstration where people will be doing their own grafting at the Small Farms Conference to be held in Ames on February 10th. It's an all-day conference. Registration is real reasonable. It's $50. But the afternoon sessions include one session Patrick O'Malley will be conducting on grafting fruit trees. So it's a great conference to go to, but that's just an added supplement and you will be taking home a grafted fruit tree that you have grafted yourself. So you can look on the Iowa State University Extension website and just do a search for Small Farm Sustainability Conference, and you'll be able to find out registration information there. But that, again, is Saturday, February 10th at Scheman in Ames.
And this is a great time of year, no matter where you are in the state, to look for gardening education. A lot of people are holding workshops or conferences. Everybody's getting itchy fingers, I think, this time of year.
And Patrick normally does two or three grafting workshops each winter. I just don't know the dates at this point. So you might want to contact Patrick O'Malley. He's located in the Johnson County Extension Office.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your call, Ralph. Next up, Gerald in Waterloo. Hi, Gerald.
Hello. I just got a question. I've got a couple acres of prairie grass that's been established probably for 20 years or better, and it's kind of close to my house and my pond. I just wondered if it's detrimental to plants if I burn that off every spring, just mainly for aesthetic reasons.
Oh, I probably wouldn't burn it off every year, but yes, it would be beneficial to burn it periodically, yes, if you can safely do it.
But not every year, every couple years, then?
Maybe every 3 or 4 years, typically, I think is more appropriate.
Oh. All right. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Gerald. Next up, Susan in Des Moines. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Yes, I have a question regarding cucumbers, a variety my mother-in-law used to grow. She called them long johns. They were quite long and slim and very thin-skinned. I don't know whether those are Armenian cucumbers or not, but I have a hard time finding them. What kind are they, and what should I look for if I'm trying to grow those?
Yeah, I would hate to guess. What you might want to do, there are a couple of companies that specialize in heirloom or unusual vegetables. You may want to check their web pages. One is Baker Creek Seeds, Baker Creek Seeds in Missouri. And also Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. They both kind of basically specialize in heirloom or very unusual vegetables. So I would try those two places. See if you can find it, because they often have very, very nice photographs with the description.
All right, Susan, good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. Dan is on the line in Ames. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how you doing, Linda?
Oh, good, good. How are you?
Good. Yes, it's a wonderful day in Iowa. Anyway, my question, I've done this in the past, and I found out about it accidentally once when I iced down one of my willow trees, and when the ice broke off, the branches, some of them stabbed the ground, and they all rooted. So I know you can do that with a lot of trees, too. You can, I think they're called Skyans, that you there's a certain time when you trim the branches. I think some people put them in the freezer or fridge. And at the appropriate time, you just stick them in the soil. Mm-hmm. You break off the bottom buds, and they root. And all of a sudden, you got a little tree.
Willows are great for that, like pussy willows, and you can root those practically in water if you cut a stem, and they'll develop roots as you're trying to enjoy the nice buds on the pussy willow. So willows are notorious for that.
And cottonwoods, forsythia, which is a shrub, you can do that with grapevines. But basically, those are hardwood cuttings that you would collect basically in late winter, and you can cut them into sections and then put them in the refrigerator with some moist peat moss, store them there so they stay dormant. And then in the spring early, you put them in the ground, and sometimes they root. So, but it doesn't work for things like, for example, most of your trees like a linden or a maple or an oak, they're just not going to do it.
All right. Well, Dan, thanks a lot for your call. Let's do a few email questions here. This one's from Corey. I'm a new gardener, and last year I tried planting red cabbage, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts, among other things. I found that the cabbage especially was quickly overrun by caterpillars. I'm wondering if there's any way I can prevent that, and if after they've started to live in my cabbage, if there's anything I can do to save the plant.
Well, there are insecticides that contain a bacterium, abbreviated BT, And it's a bacterium that basically, when consumed by caterpillars, it destroys them. It doesn't harm anything else. It doesn't harm ants or beetles or butterflies. Okay, it's very specific. There are a number of different product names available. Things like Dipel or Thuricide are very common. So I would use those at the very first sign of damage, and that should control them pretty well.
All right. He also has a second question. He says, the cauliflower was among the ugliest plants I've ever seen. It was stingy and not growing in uniform heads. How can I grow a nicer looking plant?
Well, a lot of it is dependent on a few things. One is transplant size. You don't want to put out a real large transplant because they get a little root bound. They start to produce a head they call buttoning early, and that head never amounts to anything. So start with a small size transplant that's been well treated, and oftentimes they do grow well if you start them yourself. So start with a transplant, give them plenty of room to grow, and start with a good variety like Snow Crown. That is pretty much the best one that we can grow here in Iowa, I think, in my opinion, Snow Crown. So you start with Snow Crown, and then as the heads start to develop, when they're a little bit bigger than golf ball but not quite tennis ball size, you need to tie up the outside wrapper leaves. And to do this, you could use twine or you could use anything flexible, but you just want to tie it up loosely to block the sunlight from reaching the head. And so you're blanching it, so to speak. And that works really well. But you've got to watch it because within a week or less, depending on the temperature, it's going to form a full-size head. It's going to grow very rapidly, and it will get real ricey, and it'll open up if you don't catch it soon enough. And you don't want that. So a nice, large, firm head needs to be, the leaves need to be tied up around it. So, and watch it carefully.
All right. Here's a question from Laura. We have two aronia shrubs that were planted 5 or 6 years ago. They're not receiving enough sun and are not producing any berries. We'd like to move them. Is it too late to successfully transplant them? They're approximately 5 to 6 feet tall.
It could be done.
Big project.
Yeah, it could be done, but you want to do it as soon as possible if you're going to do it because they're only going to get bigger. So I would do it basically early April when they're still dormant, when the ground has kind of firmed up, and basically dig them up with a nice ball of dirt around them. And you may need help. Most likely you will. And replant them as soon as possible. And you may want to do some pruning too before you do the actual digging to kind of reduce their size a little bit.
Sure. Make them a little more manageable.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Ed is on the line in Agency. Hi, Ed.
Hi, good morning.
What's your question?
I have a couple of questions. I live in the country on a gravel road, and we have asparagus that grows along the sides of the road several places, and I stop and cut it and pick it. So I've dug that up from time to time, brought it into my garden, thinking I could raise it, and I just have no luck at all getting that asparagus. Sometimes I haven't moved it 6 or 8 or 10 feet from the front of my yard, basically, to my garden. And so what is weird about asparagus, or what does it need?
It's just that they don't like to be transplanted. They just don't. And if you try doing it, oftentimes they just never fully recover. So it's best just to kind of leave them where they are, make a mental note as far as where they are. But as far as transplanting them, they just don't transplant well. They just don't.
Some of my neighbors don't always appreciate that, though.
Well,
you can buy asparagus starts,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Don't seed them. Start them by your plants and plant them. It'll take a year or two. There's the male hybrids that are really good right now. If you want a small patch, get a few plants.
Well,
I feel your pain, though, Ed. We've got a great plot in our ditch and a terrible plot in our garden. You're not alone.
They seem to grow along the side of the limestone gravel road. And so is it something about the lime that they like?
No, it's just they're pretty resilient plants. They really are. It's just that they just do not transplant. Once they're growing, they don't like to be disturbed. They just don't.
So they seem to be growing on the side of a hill where the ground drops away pretty dramatically. Do they like to be well-drained?
Yes, absolutely. They do need a well-drained soil. They do not like wet, poorly drained sites. So you typically don't see those in ditches where it gets wet. They don't like
right.
that. So basically,
up on top of the road, up on top of the hill, where the ground drops off dramatically.
They can handle heat and drought. They don't like wet.
Okay. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck, Ed. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Paul in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I have a small lemon tree. It's a dwarf lemon tree. I've had it about a year. In the summer, it's outside, plenty of sun and heat. It's great. In the winter, we have it in. It's a south window. But the leaves are turning yellow from the inside out, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking I need to fertilize it. I'm wondering what fertilizer to use, and can I do that now?
The turning inside, the inside leaves are the older leaves. And the older leaves were probably used to being growing outside where the light intensities were higher. And so now they're not adjusting to the indoors very well. And so they're going to drop those leaves. Is that a problem? No, it's very typical when you have outdoor plants. It's very typical. As far as fertilizer, I probably wouldn't fertilize it for another month or so when you're going to start to move it out of doors because they're not growing real rapidly right now. Give it a good all-purpose soluble fertilizer probably in March or April, and then regularly as you put it outdoors because it'll be growing more rapidly.
And in the fertilizer, do I need to look for something specific or just an all-purpose one?
An all-purpose one. Miracle-Gro. To drop a name would be just about as good as anything you can find.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Paul. Let's go to Chad in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Chad.
Hello.
What's your question?
My mother brought back a packet of variety of plant flowers from Austria, and she informed me what they do is they collect the seeds from these flowers from the plants and then reuse them the following year. My plants have been inside, and I was not for sure if the seeds that I collected needed to go through like a cold stage for them to then germinate this coming spring when I plant them again.
Well, it kind of depends upon the type of seed that you have. Most annual seeds from annual plants do not need any special treatment. They don't. They'll germinate immediately or within a few days. Many seeds from perennial plants, many need to be exposed to cool, moist conditions for a period of time before they will germinate, or it helps to improve their germination. So for example, a petunia, a marigold, no treatment. But many of your perennial plants, like let's say, for example, purple coneflower, they germinate much better if they're exposed to a period of cool, moist conditions.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for your call, Chad. Good luck. Next up, Doug in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Good morning. First off, let me just say I love your show. Wish you could do it two or three times a week. You could take a spot, but we could use less politics and more gardens.
Okay, noted. What's your question?
That being said, okay, so out of all my fruit trees, I've had the best luck with peaches. I know the books don't always say that. I've got a Reliance, a Contender, and an Intrepid. The Contenders were wonderful. I've got some seedlings started from the pits, and they grew 4.5 feet in a year. So the question is, will those seedlings hold true to the peaches? I mean, different sites say different things.
If they're from a variety and you plant the seed, they will not be identical to their parent. They will not be genetically identical. There'll be some variability as far as maybe the hardiness, maybe the size of the fruit. But when you grow something from seed, it's not going to be genetically identical to the parent tree. So there's going to be some variability.
All right. Doug, thanks a lot for your call. And here's our final question for the day. This one's from Lisa. I recently purchased a home, and I want to plant a mulberry tree in the backyard. I was wondering when the best time to plant one of these is, and if you have any tips or tricks for me. The backyard should get full sun.
Both Richard and I are looking at each other. Why would you do that?
Well, early spring would be the prime time to do that. And as far as actually buying one, if you go to a garden center, you will see the weeping form, which is fairly common. It's a mulberry, but it's also fruitless. It's
which
a weeping
is probably
form.
Not what you want.
No.
Well, but if as far as planting one, dig one up in the country and do that early in the spring.
Absolutely. Or you can wait for a bird to do it for you because they're yes. pretty darn good at it. But it should do great in full sun and
yep.
be
yep.
fruitful and multiply. All right. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Linda Nave, Iowa State University Extension Specialist in Value-Added Agriculture. Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Horticulture Day. And then, of course, Hort Day will be back on weekly starting in March. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great day.